us to use radios as vehicles of the psychological warfare.
And the tent was suddenly filled with an announcer's voice speaking commie. Then with music from Moscow, followed by English and French speech.
The recording was made at the Moscow Theater of Musical Miniatures.
Now, back to modern times.
Your attention, please. At the recommendation of the International Time Bureau, commencing at 23 hours, 59 minutes, 60 seconds UTC, an extra second will be inserted into the NBS time scale. This adjustment is required to maintain internationally coordinated universal time as broadcast from these stations in close agreement with UT1 or astronomical time.
WA6ODB with a question.
Special designer song follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, what's up? This is Ro. Yes, I know I have been curiously absent for the show over the last couple of weeks. People on Facebook know what's going on, but for everybody else, my youngest daughter recently graduated, so we had to do the whole graduation ceremony, then there was the graduation party, and then there was the prep for both of those and getting the time off from work, and then life happens. And to be honest with you, I just haven't been able to get the time to be able to get behind this microphone or do anything with the show like booking guests or any of that kind of stuff. I've just been far too busy for that over the last few weeks. Fortunately, Lobo was cool enough to record an episode of his solo project, The Spark, and I was able to sit down and edit that together and do some production on it, which actually was cool because I needed the break. Originally, I was going to release a best of episode this week, and for whatever reason, I just didn't do it. I just didn't feel like it. I actually had a little bit of time, so I sat down and dipped my foot back into the waters of found audio. Now, originally, I had found a bunch of really cool reports from people that are in the air industry, pilots, air traffic controllers, all of these different people that had called into the National UFO Reporting Center and reported incidences of UFOs or strange aerial phenomena as they were piloting or they were on the ground controlling the radar. And then I came across something else. I came across the Travis Walton interview, which he gave on 11/11/1975, which was his first interview from when he had his abduction experience, or I will say alleged abduction experience to keep the skeptics happy. Anyways, long story short, this was the guy that the movie Fire in the Sky was based off of, which with all Hollywood based on a true story movies was very much embellished and Hollywoodized, and the story was changed and made somewhat different. However, this story, which is what I've decided to run instead of the other stuff, which relax, I will release the other stuff later on because it was very cool. But anyways, back to Travis Walton. He basically had his abduction experience. He was gone for a few days. The people that he was with were all given lie detector tests and they were cleared. They all passed polygraph tests, except for one of them which was inconclusive. I don't have that information in front of me, so I don't want to tell it and give the wrong story. But basically, then he came back. He claims that he woke up at a gas station with his clothes on and he went to a telephone booth and called one of the guys and said, "Hey, I'm here. I'm back. I'm at this telephone booth. You got to come help me." Person almost hung up because he thought that it was a prank call and he insisted, "No, this is Travis. I'm here. I need help. You've got to come get me." And then they came and got him. He hid from the media for a while because of all the hubbub and all the sensationalism that was going on. And finally, he gave this interview to Face the State. And the interview is about 26 minutes to a half hour long. There are other versions of this out there. I know there's a couple up on YouTube where the audio quality isn't as good or they've been edited and so forth. So what I've done is I've taken this interview and I've just cleaned it up. I haven't edited anything out of it. I've tried to get rid of some of the hiss and tried to bring it up a little bit better to make it sound better for podcasting purposes. And I'm going to run the interview. I don't know if I legally can, but I figure since it's out in the public domain and I'm not making any money on it, what the hell? Sure, I'll throw it out there. And if anybody's got a problem with it, they can say, pull it down and I'll pull it down. But I just thought it was very cool because this is literally the very first interview he gives to the media. And this is, for lack of a better term, ground zero of where it all started from. This was the very first time that he spoke about it. And it all starts here. So I thought it was really cool. Having said all of that, we will see you guys next week. I don't know if we're going to have a guest or not. More than likely, it's probably just going to be a ramble cast because I've got all kinds of crazy news that's built up. And then the show should return to somewhat of a quote-unquote normal status, because we do have irons in the fire that I got to get pulled out and get moving here. And that's it. And I will see you guys again soon. Take care. This is Rogan. Peace out from the D.
They're made out of meat.
Meat?
There's no doubt about it. We picked up several from different parts of the planet, took them aboard our recon vessels, and probed them all the way through. They are completely meat.
It's impossible.
On a chilly November night, seven men had their lives changed here in the Sitgreaves National Forest near Heber. Riding in their truck, they saw what they believed to be an unidentified flying object hovering in this clearing. One of the seven, Travis Walton of Snowflake, leaped from the truck and ran up for a closer look. His companions say he was struck by a bluish light emitting from the craft and knocked down. Terrified, they fled, but later regained their composure and returned. When they did, Travis Walton was gone. From that point on, his story is pretty well known. The six men, his companions, all passed lie detector tests in reference to the incident. Travis Walton reappeared after several days with a bizarre story about a ride in an unidentified flying object. But it's been basically a second-hand story. Travis has been in hiding and has not met with the media. Consequently, there have been a lot of questions about the truthfulness of what Travis has had to say. But now, Travis Walton has decided to end that silence in this exclusive interview on this special edition of Face the State. Travis, perhaps the best thing to do would be to, for the first time publicly, recount your story from the time you were driving in the truck and what happened.
Well, the first part has been told by all the witnesses that, I'll recount my view of that. We just finished working, and because it was getting dark, we packed up to leave, and all got in the truck and we were riding up the road, and we looked off to the right side of the road, and I saw a glow that I thought was a sunset or something. I was about to comment when we came past the thicket that where we were looking through to where we could see more clearly, and we saw a UFO hovering in the air about 30 yards off to the side of the road. Everybody started to yelling, and they stopped the truck. And I wanted to get a closer look, and I got out of the truck and I started over there. Everyone was yelling that I to come back and to stop. I stopped and looked back, and somebody called my name, and I turned back around, and it started to make a noise and started to move, and I took one step. I crouched down behind a log that was there, and just as I started to raise up, I was just going to stand up. I didn't have any intention of going any closer, but it was just as if I was struck. It was kind of a physical blow to, it just knocked me back. I don't remember seeing any flash of light or anything like what they described. I just lost consciousness. When I regained consciousness, I was looking up at a light shining down on me from the ceiling. I could tell I was leaning up on a bed or a table or something, because the ceiling was close. I was in a lot of pain. I couldn't quite bring myself totally awake.
What type of pain? What parts of your body?
It was kind of like in my head, but just all over it. I can't describe it. I believed that I was in the hospital, and I was looking up at the ceiling, and I didn't make any attempt to move because of the pain I was in, but I felt something laying across my chest, and I looked down, and it was sort of a flat thing that kind of curved across like that, and I couldn't focus my eyes very well, but I looked beyond the top edge of the thing that was laying across me, and I saw two men leaning over me. They weren't really men. They were a lot like men, but they weren't quite human.
What did they physically look like?
They were had kind of underdeveloped features and no hair of any kind, and they were dressed in kind of a brownish orange.
And how tall were they?
They were slightly shorter than myself.
What type of clothing was it dressed?
It was sort of a loose coverall. I didn't see any buttons or anything like that. But I, being in so much pain and everything, I didn't even think. I just lashed out and knocked them back. I could see that there was two on the right side and one on the left. I jumped into the corner.
Did you actually strike them? Did you actually touch them when you lashed out?
Yes, I did. I kind of hit these two with the back of my arm, and they fell back really easily.
Did it feel like hitting a person would?
Yes. They seemed light, like they weren't heavy, but I couldn't stand up very well. I leaned against, there was a bench across the back wall. I say the back wall, I mean, there was only one door. And I grabbed up a tube, a clear piece of glass or something, and I tried to break off the end to get something sharp to defend myself with, but they didn't try to approach. They just kind of put out their hands like that, and I was leaning up. I couldn't stand up very well. I was breathing very heavily, and they didn't try to approach or anything. They just left. They just ran out real fast, and I was alone there for several minutes, and I couldn't catch my breath. It was very hot, and I was afraid they'd come back. And so I left. They'd gone. There was a corridor outside, and they went to the right, and I went to the left.
You went through the door?
Yeah, there was no door. It was just a hole, a doorway.
An open.
And it was a curving hallway, and it curved to the right. There was another door with no doorway. It was just a hole. And I went into a room there, and
had you gone very far, a very far distance at that point?
It was only about 30 feet or 40 feet, I don't know. Not very far. Mm-hmm. No, not even that far. I don't remember. It was a very narrow corridor, and it was dimly lit everywhere. And I went into this room that you could see out. It was. You could even see the stars back through the wall I just came through. I could still see that there was walls, but I could see the stars at the same time.
And it didn't look like windows?
No, it wasn't like that. And there was nothing in the room but a chair with some controls and knobs and things. I was hysterical. I was frantic, and I just moved around there for a while, and I started fooling with the buttons there.
Did you sit in the chair?
And I did later. At first, I just touched it, man. I didn't think I should be. I was afraid I'd mess something up and that somebody would come. And I heard somebody come in, and I turned around, and it was a man, just like people. I mean, he wasn't like the other creatures or whatever at all. He looked just like you and I, except he had a helmet on, a sort of a clear helmet.
And he got hair and everything?
Yes. I started babbling questions to him. I ran over there, and he wouldn't answer me. He just took me by the arm and wanted me to go with him. I thought maybe he can't hear me through the helmet. So we went out through the door, down to the right, and out to the left. There was a small room there. It had doors on it, and it was kind of like an airlock thing. It was just a small room with nothing in it. And then there was a door that went outside, and it was a ramp that went down, and it was cool outside. I could feel wind. There was a draft or something. It was a large room that this thing was sitting on the floor in there, and it was shaped like the drawing that they made, like the thing we saw the first time, only bigger. And there was two other things in there. Other UFO looking things looked like flying saucers, kind of, except they were rounded, an oval shape, and they're really shiny, like chrome. It was a big room, like there was a lot more room in there, and it was a curved ceiling that curved this way, and it had flat ends to the room. I came out of the door out of that first ship facing this way, and there was a doorway across in the far wall. He'd led me across there and through that doorway down a hallway to a room, and there I'd had a burning in my chest, and it was starting. I felt better. I was trying to get this man to tell me what, you know. I asked him if he was from Earth, and just anything I could think of, and he wouldn't answer.
Was he expressionless? Did he have any expression?
No, he looked friendly. I mean, he gestured and smiled, but there was no words.
In this place that you were in, could you see out at all?
No, there was no way out there.
So you were going from one ship to another, was that essentially it?
Yeah. This must have been inside of a larger building or ship. I don't know if it was a large ship or a building. There was no way. I never felt any motion or anything. It was just like being in a large building all the time, everything solid. I was led down the hallway. The man sat me in a chair and in a room with three other people that were like himself. They were dressed in blue. And he went out. There was a door on the other side. He went on through. And I sat in the chair and I tried to get the people to talk to me that were there, and they didn't have things on their head, and so I thought that maybe they could hear me, but they wouldn't answer either. There was two men and a woman in the room after the first man left. A man and a woman came from around the table, and they each took me by the arm and led me over to the table and got me up on the table, and I don't know why I should cooperate with them. They put a deal over my face. It was kind of like an oxygen mask thing. It's kind of clear plastic, and it had a round black thing on it about that big, just attached to it. And I looked up at the ceiling, which was just, it was all solid light. There wasn't any light fixture or anything. The light in the room just came from the ceiling. And that was last I remembered. I went to sleep until I woke up. I was laying on the pavement. It was very cold. I woke up very suddenly, and I looked up the roadway. I was laying outside it. It was night, and I could see a light on the bottom of a flying saucer that looked just like the rounded ones that were inside there, and it was very shiny, but the only light came out of the bottom, but then that went off, and it just went straight up really fast, just without a sound.
And what were your feelings at that point? Were you still in pain? Did you know where you were?
I didn't know where I was immediately, but I recognized the roadway, and I could see a light down the hill, so I ran down that way. And it was about a mile, or a half a mile to Heber. And I ran down to the phone booth that is by the gas station there. And I called my brother-in-law, and I don't know what I said. I was hysterical, and he answered and said, "Who is this?" And I tried to tell him, and he said, "I think you got the wrong number," and he started to hang up, and I screamed at him that, you know, it was me, and so he stopped, and he said, "Well, okay, I'll get somebody to come and get you." And I hung up, and I just couldn't stand up anymore, and I just sat down there.
Were you in physical pain?
No, not at the time. I didn't feel any more pain. I just was so weak I couldn't stand up. I was extremely thirsty, and I haven't been able to make any purpose out of that or anything, but that's the way it happened.
We'll be joined by Jim Lorenzen of Aerial Phenomena Research Organization after these messages. We've been joined now by Jim Lorenzen, who is the director of APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. Jim, before we get to you, I think there's one question that I would like to pose to Travis, and it's a question that's been bothering a lot of people. And Travis, why didn't you bring your story to the media?
Well, my family told me about the news people and all the people that were crowding around, and I was just in no condition to talk to anybody, especially, you know, a mob of people like that. I just couldn't handle it.
Is that typical, Jim, in cases?
It is in some cases, yes. I can vouch for what he said, because when I first saw Travis, he was in a very unsettled state, and he was really in no position to defend questions or to respond.
You have listened to the description that he gave us of his ordeal. What are your comments, your reactions in comparison with past cases?
Well, I was struck by the fact that he described these beings that didn't look quite human. He described them precisely the way another person has described them who had a similar experience. Now, this case has not been published anywhere, and no case like it that I know of has been published, so it's something that Travis could not have read anywhere. And the descriptions are identical.
There was some apparent conflict between different organizations, UFO organizations, over Travis's story. Why are you defending it, and why did the others seemingly discount it?
Well, some people get concerned about their image, and they don't realize that this subject has many facets to it that can be embarrassing, in the sense that public acceptance is lacking. The story seems to the uninitiated pretty wild. I think the fact that our organization has now going on 24 years experience made us able to cope with this in a much more sane and realistic manner than people without that kind of experience.
Could you tell us what kind of testing that Travis has undergone, what the results were of that, and what the plans are for the future?
Well, I can do this generally. We had him checked by a couple of MDs, and they ran some tests. I don't have all the results, but I can say this, that there was urine analysis done on the first urine sample after his incident, and this completely does away with the idea that there was any drug involvement that some people brought up. That and the blood samples really straighten that out. There's none of that involved. He's been interviewed in great depth by some very well-respected psychiatrists, and they have concluded that he is not a party to any hoax, and that he's telling the truth. Now, when we call in witnesses, or I mean call in experts like this to interview witnesses, of course we call them in because we feel they're qualified to make those judgments. And I have no trouble accepting those judgments at all, particularly, as I mentioned, since parts of his story really correspond with cases that we know of already.
Was this under regressive hypnosis?
Now, regressive hypnosis has been performed by still another man. In fact, it's performed by Dr. Jim Harder of Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley. He's our research director, and he is a specialist in this sort of work, and has been involved in quite a few other cases. Under the regressive hypnosis, he relived the thing just essentially as you saw here, probably with a little more detail.
What other kind of tests would he be going through in the future?
Well, you see, we're really sort of past the testing stage, in a sense. In other words, from now on, I think you'd be more likely to call it research. We hope to have this memory, the block memory, relieved so that we can get a full account of what happened. This may take time, and there may be a program delay that we just have to wait for. It'll just depend on how he feels as time goes by.
Why not the polygraph test? This has been a major criticism.
All right. Because a lot of people have criticized it because they think polygraph is a lie detector. because it's called that, but it's not. And Travis was under that impression too. He was anxious to take the lie detector or polygraph test. I advised him not to, and several other people advised him not to, because what it actually measures is stress. And questions about stressful memories would bring stress reactions just as well as anything else. So it would have been meaningless to have him take that test at the time. It could have been, in fact, one of the psychiatrists said it would have been a disaster for him to take it at the time. It would have created a lot of false impressions.
How would you explain the other six witnesses taking a test and having passed it then?
Well, their memories, of course, are not blocked. They remember what happened. It wasn't the same sort of stressful situation that Travis has obviously gone through.
Travis, what would you like for your future? What would you like to have come of this?
Just acceptance of myself in the future. I have had a lot of offers of people trying to turn it into some kind of a profitable thing, but I have no interest in any of those kind of offers. I just want the truth to be known. I have intentions to cooperate with research, with reputable men that are, you know, genuinely scientifically interested, like the men with APRO. And but as far as any kind of a big, you know, project like that,
I think we've talked about this to some, and Travis doesn't want to make a big deal out of it. He just wants to quietly find out what went on in that period, if it's possible, if it'll help advance the state of knowledge on this subject.
Do you wish it had never happened to you?
Well, hindsight, I don't know. What happened.